This is the Fixer Sciatica Podcast.
So every now and then, I take some time to investigate various different modalities and tools that are helpful when it comes to treating pain, not just sciatica pain, but pain that is hard to manage. And it would behoove me to go and look into the various other tools provided by different providers because I know the limitations of my knowledge. And this is one of the reasons why I interview various different guests on shows like this, so we can really spread the word and be a little bit more informative than what you would see from a typical website landing page. And today we're going to be talking about stellate ganglion blocks. It's a very specialized area in the neck, and we're going to take a little bit of a deeper dive in regards to the role of the stellate ganglion, why we would block it, and what are the conditions as to this tool or intervention could be helpful. But rather than me just trying to do the research on my own, I have Dr. Arun Kalava, a physician who actually does this in his clinic, and he was kind enough to share his expertise all the way from across the country down in Florida. So Dr. Kalava, it's great to see you. Thank you so much for being on today's show.
Great to be here, Ashley. Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to talking to you and you know, imparting the knowledge I have about stellate ganglion block. And if you have any questions, go ahead.
Yeah, and I'll say what was interesting is what I think I found you or got connected with you on LinkedIn. I think you were talking about this intervention, and I said, this is really interesting. So I took a little bit of a deeper dive and figured out, okay, it's part of the nervous system. We're looking at the neck specifically. And I was like, this is an entirely new thing, which I'm sure a lot of patients who are dealing with chronic pain, a lot of different other issues could really benefit from. So before we actually take a deep dive into talking about this specific intervention, tell us a little bit more about yourself and the work that you do.
So I'm an anesthesiologist by training. I did a fellowship in pain from Mayo Clinic in Jacksonville here in Florida. And then I moved 10 years ago to Tampa, and I started my own private practice almost 6 years ago. The top three reasons I would say somebody would see me is post-surgical pain, any surgery of any kind, trauma-related pain, they had a trauma, and then pelvic pain. And lately, I've been seeing a multitude of conditions which could be managed by stellate ganglion blocks. Those would be my top three, and then the fourth one is basically this new stellate ganglion block we've been doing for many years, with multitude of indications, which we'll be talking obviously today about.
So let's take a moment and briefly explain pain. Now, pain is from my training, pain is a signal that gets sent from their body part, but then it ultimately gets processed in our hypothalamus, right? And so it's the signal that we get that gets interpreted from a perception standpoint in regards to danger. And so from your background, share with us a little bit more about kind of how we'll share like a couple of the typical pain pathways with some of the atypical pain pathways that you come across or patients face on a daily basis.
So, you know, I would like to classify pain perception into three main categories, you know, nociceptive pain, neuropathic pain, and sympathetically mediated pain, you know. If there is a tissue damage, let's say there's a bone broken, that's nociceptive, right? Neuropathic pain, the nerve itself is irritated or damaged, neuropathic pain. Now, sympathetically mediated pain, we're in the fight and flight nervous system, which has a role in our body. It has multiple roles in the body. One of them is sensing pain or, you know, if that goes whack, then people tend to have sympathetically mediated pain. That's when we talk about sympathetic blocks, or one of the sympathetic blocks is stellate ganglion block, which we'll be talking about today.
Yeah, the very fascinating. I was actually just talking about my most recent episode was about sleep and sleep and pain. And it does kind of influence this sympathetic cycle that with our sympathetic system, which is our fight or flight system, if we have less sleep, our sympathetic system is going to kick in to make sure that we stay awake when we need to stay awake. And then it kind of heightens our pain sensitivities throughout that time. And so I'm glad that we're taking an even deeper dive in regards to this specific area. So let's talk about this stellate ganglion. What is it specifically? Where is it located? And how does it get involved with our overall function?
So stellate ganglion, basically a bunch of nerves in front of the neck, usually around the cervical vertebra 6, 7, and the thoracic first vertebra and the first rib. So what it does is it does send signals to the head and neck, face, the arms, the upper limbs, and also the upper part of the chest. It does have a role in heart rate regulation, blood pressure regulation, pain regulation, and sweating as well. So that's basically a bunch of nerves in front of their neck. Again, there is a right stellate ganglion block, and the left stellate ganglion. So you have both sides. That's what it is. That's the function of that stellate ganglion.
And how would this area get, say, irritated or affected? Is it more of a scenario where someone experiences some sort of physical... do they have to experience, like, direct physical trauma to the neck, or is it caused by... is an irritation of that area caused by some other different mechanism? Or, I guess, just to change the question, what are the mechanisms in which the stellate ganglion can get irritated or malfunction or have some sort of dysfunction?
Right, so we don't have a clear answer as to how it can get, but there is a multitude of physical and mental ailments which tend to have, which wherein the stellate ganglion has a role to play in as a pathophysiology, as a reason why somebody would have that painful condition, mental instability, heart rate instability. We'll talk about multiple medical conditions which we use stellate ganglion block for. So does it get irritated? There is a chance it would get irritated. Does trauma to the neck cause it? There hasn't been any causal relationship that has been established so far. So we don't know the exact reason why it would get irritated, but we're treating this as one of the causes of these many disorders we'll be talking about today as to where it can be applied to.
So let's talk a little bit more about the conditions or the issues that arise that makes you think, or the medical community consider, all right, maybe the stellate ganglion is actually getting irritated in the first place. Like, what are some of the signs of, what are the signs or symptoms that patients experience, or like physicians such as yourself notice being like, we should actually take a look at the stellate ganglion and see if it's functioning a little bit more properly? Or, and is it usually like the first thing, first line of defense in terms of management, or is it something that it gets looked at further down the line?
So I'll answer the last question first. It's usually not the first line of defense or, you know, treatment for majority of the conditions. It's usually almost always either the last or last but one treatment. Now, many of the physicians and patients alike know about nerve blocks or a steroid shot. They know these words, right? The only block that has the most indications in science and medicine is the stellate ganglion block. It can be applied to at least 10 medical conditions. There is not a single block out there which can be used for a multitude of treatments. It is not just to alleviate, it's literally to treat these conditions wherein they would get long-term to permanent results out of that. So I'll go over a list of these. Are you ready for this? Because it's very extensive.
I'm ready. So I'm ready.
I'll talk about the more common indications I would see in my office, right? The number one indication is post-traumatic stress disorder. Again, why do somebody have PTSD? Because the fight and flight system has gone whack, right? It's out of control. They always are, you know, hypervigilant. They can't sleep. They get anxious. So that would be the number one reason somebody would see me. The number two reason, you'd be surprised, is actually long COVID, people with brain fog, people with lack of smell, people with lack of taste. So what we know with COVID is it causes dysautonomia, wherein the autonomic nervous system or the sympathetic nervous system is affected, wherein it's derailed. So we're trying to do this block to reset the whole sympathetic nervous system. And this seemed to have miraculous results. So number three reason is complex regional pain syndrome. Again, in the pain world, some people know about that. They call CRPS, right? RSD, or reflex sympathetic dystrophy. That's an indication as well. So it's been done primarily for that reason for decades, the complex regional pain syndrome. Lately, PTSD has been, addressed in the last 10 to 15 years. Once COVID came in, that became one of the, tools for us to treat COVID. The other indications you would think about is insomnia. You were talking about insomnia. There's a study out of China. 80 patients were tested with stellate ganglion block. 100% of them responded to it. They had significant improvement in their sleep patterns. Why? Because they're hypervigilant, cannot sleep, because they're always, boom, up. Their lights are on. What are the other indications? Acute limb ischemia. What is ischemia? It's lack of blood supply. So it opens up blood supply when we do this nerve block. So those are usually done in the hospital setting. Phantom limb pain. Somebody has an amputation of the hand or the upper extremity. We can use that as well. Tinnitus. Same thing. If they have ringing in the ears, they've tried everything possible. The ENT surgeon would say, hey, I can't do anything. Try this. I've had a couple of patients who come and they're like, well, I can listen to rock music now. Like, good for you. Hiccups. There's an indication for hiccups as well. If there is chronic, persistent, debilitating hiccups. Hidradenitis or excessive sweating in the arms is an indication as well. Hot flashes. Let's say a woman, you know, after menopause, tried hormones, not working. You do the stellar ganglion block. It's actually a scientific indication. So I literally went through almost 10 or more indications. As I mentioned, this is the only block in the medical science that has the most indications to treat many disorders. So does it answer your question? I'm sure there's a lot of indications people come and see me for. I know I'm a pain physician, but listen, these other medical conditions, those doctors are not trained to do that. As a pain physician, I am. So I said, you know, I'll do it. Psychiatrists cannot do a stellar ganglion block because they're not trained to. But guess what? It fixes them, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so glad that you shared a lot of these indications because as you were sharing with me, a couple thoughts come to my head in regards to the power of this. And so it gets me thinking initially about like how the medical community like discovered like patients, the additional indications for this intervention. It was kind of like, you know, here you have this one specific intervention, and then we look at how many other conditions can it treat, which I found to be extremely powerful.
This episode is brought to you by the Patient Advocate Program. Are you tired of not having support between your rehab sessions? Introducing the Patient Advocate Program, and we're focused on your recovery, and we're offering you 24/7 access to a doctorate of physical therapy. Stop waiting in line to be seen and stop spending hours doing long exercise programs. Imagine being able to get all of your care delivered straight to your phone. Best of all, it's affordable. We believe everyone deserves top-notch relief without breaking the bank. So why wait? Take control of your health today and visit ptpatientadvocate.com and book your free call with our experts.
Post-traumatic stress disorder, right? And so we're looking at people experiencing some sort of trauma, and that trauma actually gets implanted in their brain, right? And into their limbic system. And as a result, they're hypervigilant and they're consistently reliving those traumas. Now, is this something along the lines of, if someone is having PTSD, well, how would PTSD get diagnosed? And is it something where a patient would be going to their psychologist or psychiatrist and all of a sudden they're speaking with them and then the psychiatrist or psychologist or the person who's treating them says, okay, I think a stellar ganglion block could be helpful. What is that journey like for someone who's been dealing with PTSD?
So I'm not a psychiatrist, but almost all patients who come to me have seen a psychiatrist in the past. Psychotherapists, they have done psychotherapy, they have done cognitive behavioral therapy, they have done other therapies, medications, and they have not seen success. I don't say those medications don't work or psychotherapy does not work. For milder cases, they might work, but some cases, they're just resistant or they're just too difficult to treat, right? So you try the non-invasive stuff before you come to me and say, Doc, I've tried everything. What else you got in your arsenal? And I would say, this is what is an option. And the way it was discovered was initially when somebody was doing a stellar ganglion block for CRPS or complex regional pain syndrome, the patient said, Doc, for some reason my PTSD symptoms disappeared. They're like, huh, that's interesting. We treated one, you got a benefit from other ailment as well. So they did multiple studies, and we usually do a right side stellar ganglion block to address that. And then they come back 2 weeks later to do the second nerve block just to have prolonged relief. In the last 5.5 years, you know, me doing it, 90 to 95% of the patients never see me again. It's a one time or twice they come in, they're gone. They will never almost see me again, which is a good thing for them, you know what I mean? They're like, hey, my whole nervous system is reset. I push the reset button. Go live your life, you know? That's what we do.
Fantastic. So yeah, it looks as if this is really addressing the nervous system itself, the autonomic nervous system, which can be broken down into the sympathetic and parasympathetic system. And so from your experience as a pain management doctor and doing a lot of these stellate ganglion block procedures, can you share with us a little bit more of a breakdown as to why our sympathetic nervous system and parasympathetic nervous system, or the how can that activity go off balance? Because it seems as if when you have this block, it helps kind of restore that balance or having that reset. So why would there be, like, how would it go about being dysautonomic or out of balance?
So the out of balance usually is due to a trigger. It could be environmental, mental, or a physical trauma. There is an imbalance. So the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system are usually in a balance. So we as humans stay in balance. If one system gets revved up or gets irritated, it goes on an overdrive or hyperdrive. Now, what we try to do is to reset. We just shock that system, which is in a hyperdrive, which is the sympathetic nervous system in this case, with PTSD and complex regional pain syndrome and other syndromes. And we reset back to where it is supposed to be, you know, working in tandem with the parasympathetic nervous system and not, you know, overrunning it and then being the most predominant autonomic surge, you know, in the body. So we just level it out. That's just basically what it does.
And the parasympathetic and sympathetic nervous system, it's necessary for our survival, right? Like the sympathetic system is our fight or flight system. So back before the evolution of technology, we needed to be able to run from predators, but also fight predators as well. But then also we need to have that opportunity to rest and digest and sleep.
That's right.
And as you were discussing this, there was this book that came out, I think it was probably about 10 to 15 years ago, and I came across it because of just my evolution studying about chronic pain is about this. It's this book called Why Zebras Don't Have Ulcers. And the idea was the fact that usually when a zebra gets attacked by a lion, they painted this image where a zebra was at the watering hole and a lion comes and attacks it. Now, the zebra's sympathetic system kicks in, so the blood rushes to both the brain and the muscles, so then that way the zebra can run away, right? Zebra runs away, all of a sudden they survive, and then they just go back to drinking their water, eating their grass, acting like nothing's happened because they survived. This got me thinking about our human ability to memorize and have solid and core memories, and also even just experiencing trauma, because that kind of scenario happens. We release the same chemicals when we're attacked by a predator or when we're in danger. That's the same as when we get yelled at by our boss or by our friends or experiencing some sort of emotional traumatic event, right? The chemicals get released at the same time. Especially when it comes to those triggers, I find that is our human ability to memorize events that can itself lead to these recurring triggers. And so to kind of piggyback off what you're talking about, to be able to have that, in essence, a hard reset is really impactful. And especially when we're sleep deprived and all the stresses that we're going through on a daily life.
Good analogy, Ashley. I totally agree with that. So I think, as I said, you flight and flight, and then you have rest and digest. We have to balance it out. There is imbalance, then that's when, you know, we're not, you know, being ourselves, or just can't do much. You know, you try the best you can to calm yourself down. Yoga, Reiki therapy, all those things can help. But if they're not helping you enough, then you have to up the game and say, what else can I do? Maybe I just need a stronger dose of medicine. I think this is what it is. It's a stronger dose of medicine to kick you back into being normal.
Absolutely. So let's talk about that process, because there's a thought process and decision-making process on your end that helps you determine, okay, this patient is a candidate for an injection like this. And so by the time a patient comes to you, what are some of the key questions or criteria that you are looking for that helps you determine whether or not a patient is a candidate for this procedure? We'll talk about that first, and then we'll talk about the procedure itself.
So as I mentioned, there is almost 10 or more indications for stellate ganglion block. Having said that, everybody comes with a multitude of symptoms pertaining to their medical problems. And I think I always make sure they have done the minimum, you know, like they've seen other physicians. They have tried non-invasive therapy. They have tried medications. This would not be the first thing, because again, every procedure has a risk. Imagine somebody taking a needle and putting in your neck. So it's not as simple as we talk about. It's more like there is risks involved in this procedure, and you have to understand that you should do something. Like going to physical therapy, if you have a sprained ankle, don't come get a nerve block and get surgery. You have to do certain things before you come to the surgeon. Like, hey, my Achilles tendon's ruptured. Well, you need surgery. My Achilles tendon's just, you know, a little tear. Yeah, just do some physical therapy, rest, ice, get better, right? So the same thing applies to stellar ganglion block. Have you tried minimally invasive, non-invasive methods to manage your symptoms, which could be any of those? And then if they've already done those, then I would say, you know what, this is pretty much the last thing they need, unless it's worth the risk that the block comes with.
And so let's talk about, now no one likes to be told how to do their job, right? And so when patients come to you, do they say, they go to your clinic and they're like, Dr. Kalava, I need a stellar ganglion block, or it's Dr. Kalava, I've been dealing with all these issues. My doctor referred me here. I don't know what to do from, I don't, that typical, what is that like usually?
So in the 5 years we've been doing, I think the typical presentation is, I have this condition, which is one among the 10, and I have tried everything. I think stellar ganglion block might help me. That's half of the patients. The other 25% of the patients would come and say, my physician referred to me, because a lot of physicians do not know this, know about, you know, stellar ganglion block either. It's an uncommon procedure in the pain world where they're treating complex regional pain syndrome. They'll do maybe 5 in a whole year, right? I would do 5 in a week, some of the busier weeks, you know what I mean? So because I treat all the 10, 11 conditions that we mentioned. So, and the other 25% like, hey, I want to have this. And I said, well, let's sit down and say what you did before I can put a needle in the neck. And that 25% actually asked them to like come back and say, go and try this and this, because you have not tried this, because this is not a simple block. It has its own inherent risks, which should be acceptable to us, understanding that, okay, well, now we're cornered. We tried everything. This is our last resort. Let's do it. It's worth taking a risk at this point. So we always, you know, make sure they've done what they need to do before they get to us and then ask for a nerve block.
Yeah, that makes sense. So walk us through what that procedure's like in regards to what gets injected into that area and what should patients expect. We'll talk about like what gets injected, but then also how can patients get prepared for the procedure itself.
So a lot of the patients, I would say 80% of the patients who come to us would like to have the block the same day. So we'll tell them, make sure you have a driver to take you home. You can go in an Uber, but just make sure you're not driving that day. I'll come to the point why they can't drive. We inject local anesthetic or numbing medicine, just like Novocaine or Lidocaine. And what it does is it numbs those nerve bundles, you know, temporarily for about, I would say, 6 hours, 12 or 24 hours, depending on the type of the local anesthetic. And it just stops those sympathetic or fight and flight symptoms. So, and then when it numbing medicine wears off, the nervous system restarts, and we're hoping that it will start at a better pace and it's not on an overdrive pace. So that's the mechanism what we think is you know, resulting in all these good outcomes from stellar ganglion blocks. When it comes to doing the procedure, we always use ultrasound guidance. Now, ultrasound is beneficial in seeing major blood vessels in the neck, your trachea, your thyroid, your nerves, right? All those have to be avoided to deposit the medicine in the right area. There are some practitioners out there who use fluoroscopy or x-ray guidance to see the 6 cervical vertebra, 7 cervical vertebra, and thoracic one, and then inject with a dye. Again, that seems not so safe. As I mentioned, x-ray only shows us bones. It doesn't show us nerves. It doesn't show us arteries. It doesn't show us veins. It doesn't show us blood vessels in any of those critical structures that we need to avoid, even thyroid and stuff in the trachea. So the safest thing is, if you're looking for somebody, ask them, do you do this under ultrasound guidance or fluoroscopy? And if you feel comfortable with fluoroscopy and there's nobody available, I think it's, if they've done enough, it's safe enough, but it's not as safe as an ultrasound guided procedure would be. Also, since we're going into the neck, we have them fully monitored. That means we put an oxygen monitor on the finger, blood pressure monitor, and also monitor their heart rate for about 15 to 20 minutes after the procedure. The procedure itself takes from needle insertion to finishing about anywhere from 30 seconds to a minute. It's a very sharp procedure in well-trained hands. It's more like we have to make sure it's done in the right patient, and then they're fully monitored for about 15, 20 minutes, make sure they don't have any major side effects which need to be addressed before they're discharged. So patients typically expect to spend about half an hour in the office once they come in for the procedure, yes.
And you brought up side effects. So what are some of the common side effects that you're looking for, that patients should be looking for post-procedure?
So almost all of them, but not everybody, will have certain side effects. Why? Because the nerve bundle is close to other nerves, which sense, you know, other sensations in the body, like the ability to swallow, to speak. The nerves to speech, swallow are very close. The facial nerves are very close. So those get numbed as well. As I mentioned, the numbing only lasts about 12 to 24 hours. So you should expect all those symptoms to completely abate after the procedure is done. So they will have a droopy eyelid, bloodshot eye, nasal stuffiness, hoarseness or loss of voice, difficulty swallowing. Again, they're all mild symptoms, which are very well tolerated in almost all patients. Not everybody, but some people, like, I hate this sensation. I said, well, this is what we have to do for you to get better. And you have to be accepting these side effects temporarily until it resolves on its own. So the reason why they should not be driving, they have a blurry vision, a droopy eyelid. Half of your vision is gone. Very rarely you may have numbness of the upper arm because the brachial plexus, which is the main nerves, which are the main nerves to the upper extremity, go close to that as well. If the medicine goes, travels, and then starts numbing those, then you can't use your arm either. So for that reason, we always say you should not be driving for the first 12 to 24 hours.
Yeah, that makes sense, especially from a safety standpoint. Now, you said 12 to 24 hours. At what point can patients go back to normal activity? And like, what's that recovery process like?
The recovery is pretty much that same duration. You know, you're good to do whatever you want to do the next day. Sleep through the night, wake up. You should not have any side effects. You should go back to your life as you would usually do, drive, do anything you want to do. So the restrictions are very limited. It's a simple procedure. There's no recovery per se from the procedure. Like surgery, you need to recover, rest, healing. There is none of those. So it's a very quick procedure with obviously side effects for a few hours, and then you're back to normal as if nothing happens.
And is this something where it's like a one and done type of scenario? I know that you said 95% of the patients that see you don't come back because things have improved. Is this a scenario where it's like, okay, we inject it, go back to living your life, and you're good to go? Or is there a follow-up process? And then also number two, do you recommend patients continue on with the various different therapies or activities that they were doing to try to also help manage their condition?
So I'll give you examples of patients, PTSD, right, post-traumatic stress disorder. They come in for the first injection. They'll do the second injection as well. So they will come see me the second time, and they're usually gone and almost never come back unless the PTSD symptoms come back or they have had a life event which triggered the symptoms again. When it comes to long COVID, we usually do a right side and then do the left side as well. So they would see me twice. And once the smell and taste comes back, they're good. Just live your life, you know. I don't think anything will be causing them to lose the smell and taste again. So it just depends on the condition, honestly. For CRPS, or complex regional pain syndrome, patients can get a week to a few weeks to a month or two. They tend to be, you know, the more common patients who follow up and get a repeat injection. Because it's a very complex disease and, you know, very difficult to treat, as we all know about CRPS. They tend to be coming more often than other people would. Yeah, otherwise, it just depends on the condition we're treating, to be honest.
Yeah, no, that definitely makes sense. And I appreciate you sharing that, because a lot of indications for this procedure, but with those indications and those conditions, they all have their specific recovery routines and therapy. So I really appreciate you sharing that. Now, this is definitely a very specialized treatment. As you said, you are usually not the first line of defense. And so patients have gone through the gamut of providers and therapies to manage their conditions, and then they need someone like you. Which then brings me up to my last question is, for the folks who are listening and they're thinking, I might be a candidate for a stellate ganglion block. Tell us a little bit more about your clinic and how can patients get in touch with you.
So, you know, it's easy to remember our clinic name. It's called Tampa Pain MD. I'm in Tampa. I'm a pain doctor. It's called Tampa Pain MD. And the website is tampapainmd.com. So if you don't remember my name, which is obviously difficult to remember, I would say just look up Tampa Pain MD or stellate ganglion block in Tampa, and our website should come up in the first page of Google. There's also a phone number like everybody has. It's 813-533-6259. We do offer telehealth visits where people, if they're out of town, will talk to us and say, are we candidates for this procedure or not, before you travel. And then once we decide you are, then you would come in, you know, have the block done, and then come back if needed for the second one. So we will talk through the logistics depending on your condition, how many blocks will be required, you know, what is the process, when to get in. We typically get patients in within a week.
Fantastic. Listeners, if you did not get a chance to write that information down, I'm actually going to be putting that into the show notes, so then that way you can get some more information. Stellate ganglion blocks are really cool intervention that has a lot of indications. I've certainly learned a lot today, Dr. Kalava. Thank you so much for your expertise. And listeners, again, if you think you need the help from Dr. Kalava, you can go ahead and find his website into the show notes. Dr. Kalava, thank you so much.
Thank you, Ashley, for having me. That was fun.
Thank you so much for tuning in. We hope you got some help from today's podcast. And for more info, check us out at ifixyoursciatica.com. Have a fantastic and pain-free day. Thank you so much for tuning in. We hope you got some help from today's podcast. And for more info, check us out at ifixyoursciatica.com. Have a fantastic and pain-free day.
Dreaming of blissful summer days and creamy popsicles? Capture sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. Just one stick and 16 ounces of water can help hydrate you better than water alone. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout.